We've got now coming up in just a couple of minutes, we've got Jane Nielsen, and we're going to be talking about water issues in the county. Oh yeah, I'll just put a little music. I thought it would be appropriate, called Ripples in the Aquifer. How's that? I found a very appropriate song.
Nice.
Yes, that's Ripples in the Aquifer, and seems very appropriate as we introduce Jane Nielsen to my interview this last bit of the show. Welcome, Jane, to that holiday camp. You were here about a year or so ago. And so we'll have to catch up with what's been happening over this last year. Quite a bit, in fact.
Quite a bit, yeah.
In fact, one of the biggest things is just about a week ago, a couple of weeks ago, Jane was given a very big honour. She was awarded the Environmentalist of the Year by the Sonoma County Conservation...
Council.
Council, that's right.
Right, yes.
And which is quite an achievement, considering, can I call you a gadfly?
Well, I don't know that I'm a gadfly. I try to focus on water and geological issues.
Right. But the thing is, you know, you know, it doesn't matter who it is, you want to move the agenda forward, through the political and corporate system. And that's the thing. It's often an uphill battle for you.
Well, that's right. It's an uphill battle for the environmental groups to try and make their point against the forces that consider progress to be just digging up land and no matter what happens as a result.
Right, right. Yeah. Now, if you have any questions for Jane, you can give us a call in the studio, 874-1073, area code 707, or you can give us an internet email at arnold101@earthlink.net, and we can pick it up in the studio. So don't be shy out there. And, now, what is your background? Let's let everyone know sort of kind of how you got into this this field and your knowledge base.
Well, I'm a geologist, trained as a geologist. I think I got into geology in the 1960s and got advanced degrees. So I have a PhD in geology from Stanford University. And then before I got my PhD, actually, I worked at the Smithsonian Institution in Washington in the Mineral Sciences Department and for the U.S. Geological Survey a little bit just as a student. And then after I got my PhD, I taught for a while, Cal State Hayward, sort of as a substitute in the geology department. And actually, the very first thing was I got a National Science Foundation internship, postdoc, at the U.S. Geological Survey. And then I taught a little bit, and then I got a regular position. And so I worked for the USGS in Menlo Park. This was for about 25 years. And I retired at the end of 1997, taught a little bit more at Pomona College in Claremont, and then eventually moved up here to Sonoma County and to be near a son and a bunch of friends, and just kind of got involved with water almost immediately because big things were happening in 1999 when we moved up to the area.
Oh, interesting. And how did you get into geology, and how did you pick geology and that field?
Well, the interesting thing is that in high school, I had a wonderful teacher who taught history and geography, kind of fusion of history and geography. It was called geography, but there was a lot of geology in it. And I really loved it. And actually, this was in Maryland. And he took a trip. He started taking bus trips with students to the West to show them the rest of the country so that we would stop being so elitist, you know, about being Easterners and find out how dumb we really were. And then I went to school in England for a couple of years, and I took intensive geography, geology courses. And so when I came back, I thought I was going to major in geography. But by that time in the United States, geography was mostly commercially oriented, land planning and economic and so forth. So I had to take some science courses, and so I took geology, and I was hooked.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Oh, wonderful. And now, it's interesting, because I read a book a few months ago about, I think it was, I get the name right, William Smith, who really discovered geology, the Winchester book. And that was just fascinating how he figured out the geological shape of the world. That was beautiful.
It was an interesting period, because the predominant ideas about geology at that time, before that time, had been shaped by a German person, a Saxon, somebody who lived in Saxony, who had never been out of Saxony and knew only those rocks, but produced a whole universal idea that everything had precipitated out of a universal ocean. And of course, it was biblically based, you know, it was during the Noah's flood. But there had been a Frenchman who was able to trace lava flows back to the places they came from, you know, volcanoes in the central part of France, who begged to differ. So there was a huge debate among the very few people who knew anything about rocks or cared.
Yeah.
And it's still true. There are still very few people proportionately. But yes, there was this huge debate between the Wernerians and the Desmarestians, and in England it was much more practical. They were having to do things like dig canals. They, you know, the I don't know how many people know, there's this network of canals all over England, which right. before railroads were the main routes of commerce.
Yeah, the Grand Union Canal used to go very near to me.
Yeah. And so digging the canals, and this would have been in the 18th century, this is where geology really began. They had to know what they were encountering.
So it wasn't just empirical. It was, practical.
Yeah. So their ideas about rocks were based a little more practically and a little more on observation, the sort of thing that Desmarest was involved in, just actually, using his eyes to say, these rocks start at these
right.
these structures that don't look like they precipitated out of an ocean.
Right, exactly. The theory was shot full of holes, yeah.
Yeah, and so geologists do try to do that. We do try to match observation with natural processes and determine how rocks form that way.
Yeah.
However, I've started out working on rocks of the deep earth where you can't actually watch the processes, so we had to do a bit more deduction.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You got to assume a few things.
Yeah.
So,
And underground water sort of goes along with that. I got involved in looking at underground water flow in terms of how lavas, what become lavas at the surface of the earth, we call them magmas underground, are produced. And they do flow kind of like water underground, but much deeper, and found out that the same kinds of debates were going on with groundwater people. I actually published at least one paper that included groundwater references because they're very similar processes.
Mm. Well, there's that one coming up in Iceland right now. That's very interesting.
Oh, yes, yes. Yeah. In Iceland, volcanoes and water have always been intimately mixed with disastrous results sometimes, huge floods from eruptions under the glaciers, yeah.
Oh, that would be that instant melting, yeah.
Yes, and producing a kind of rock called palagonite that's not found very many other places because it's the deposit of materials that are generated when the lava meets the glacier.
So that sudden cooling creates a whole different rock.
Oh, really yucky stuff, as I understand it.
Not good for pumice stones, then, yeah.
No, not at all. So, kind of instant clay,
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. But they'll find a use for it. So obviously, and that's obviously why you've got interested in water issues here. And you formed, obviously, the Sebastopol Water Information Group, SWIG. When did you form that, help form that?
In 2003, I was a co-founder, and it grew out of a number of things that were going on. It was actually kind of practical for us, too, because, we bought some property out in the country. We're living on a well. We're geologists. We didn't know much about groundwater issues in terms of living on a well.
Right.
And of course, there were big debates going on about the expansion of vineyards into West County and, where the water was going to come from. As I recall, there was probably two or three big controversies around Occidental at the time. And there was a group forming in Pengrove that was very worried about disappearance of wells in that area. Led by John King, who right now is running for supervisor I don't remember which district it is, but it's the southern part of the county.
Okay.
He's running near Petaluma. He's running.
I was looking at the map the other day. I've forgotten.
One of those.
Yeah.
And so it was just very interesting what the group was doing down there, collecting information from people about what had happened to their wells. Were they becoming contaminated, polluted? Were they just disappearing? What was going on? Had they tried to drill new wells and all that sort of thing? And that was kind of inspiring to a number of communities. And at the same time, there was a group very worried about the potential for development in a wetland near Sebastopol. And members of groups who were, interfacing with both of those issues came together to create the Sebastopol Water Information Group. And it has attracted a number of professionals, both in water supply issues and planning, and in other, you know, more sophisticated physical analysis of water systems, people who know how to determine real conservation methods, for example.
Right.
So we do try to, well, I'll just say our mission statement is clean water information for public consumption.
Right.
So we try to provide, you know, good information. Cities, staffs may not have the expertise, and the people who work for them may not tell them, you know, everything that that we might need to know. So we try to provide that information to the public and also to, you know, city, county, and other kinds of government agencies who need to make decisions based on real, credible water information that they might not necessarily be getting.
Right, and you do that by going to public meetings and
writing comments.
Yeah,
reading long, boring documents.
Yeah,
and another thing I do is to also review the geologic sections of many reports, which are the bases for a lot of proposed projects. Some of which are ridiculous, and some of which are good, and some of which, you know, we could do without. But generally, the level of geologic information that goes into those reports, I've found, is poor.
Wow. Really not thorough. They don't want it to be thorough, in other words.
Yes, it's not thorough. It doesn't meet the state standards in general for the kind of investigation that is necessary, especially building in an area of hazards. And you could call Sonoma County a hazard county, very high hazards in this county, from landslides and earthquakes and flooding and liquefaction from earthquakes in flood zones, and now all the really safest areas have been built in, such as they are, and developments are expanding into very hazardous zones, and so. That's been a very major occupation, is reading those reports and trying to figure out if they're at all adequate.
And then somehow, you know, communicating that inadequacy to, you know, obviously to supporters, and then getting that across to those governmental agencies. That's
right. The only way that seems to work is to try to get people fired. You know, unless somebody's brought up really short, the decision makers tend not to pay much attention.
So they really just, they're in a shell, in their governmental shell, really. You know, they don't want to hear anything that's against what they want to happen. Is that really it?
I think pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They have their policy and hell or high water. Or hell and low water,
well,
I should say.
Yeah, I mean, you can see that's reflected in the kinds of variances that are granted. You know, if somebody comes in and they want an exception made to a rule or regulation that's been established for very good reasons. And sometimes it's okay to do that, but in areas of high hazards, it's generally hazardous to do that.
Right.
But you can see that those variances get granted whether there's a good reason for them or not. In many cases.
Right. And obviously, it's not just a local thing. I mean, Sebastopol is one thing, but obviously the aquifers stretch all the way across the Santa Rosa Plains. I mean, everything's interconnected.
Actually, there are very few aquifers in Sonoma County. That's one of the things that we keep trying to tell people. There are very few good aquifers in Sonoma County, and most of the people in West County do not live on good aquifers. And you can tell, I can tell just by the geology. If somebody tells me, you know, oh, I live, you know, on such and such a road out in the, you know, the hills, you know, maybe near Green Valley Road or something, and I'll say, oh, well, what do you get? Do you get 5 gallons per minute, or you get half a gallon per minute? And generally, it'll be in between there somewhere.
Okay.
Because most of the rock in that area is not an aquifer.
Oh, okay.
And okay. So the what water travels through the rock travels only through cracks, and there's not a lot of it, and it comes fairly slowly.
Okay, so there's no huge body of water there. It's just
no, there's no sponge rock to catch and store it temporarily while it's moving on its way to wherever it ends up, the ocean or a stream or a pond or whatever.
Right. Now, obviously, with that confined amount, obviously, I think you're finding one of the concerns was wells running dry.
Oh, yeah. Wells and streams running dry.
Oh, really? Mm-hmm. Actually, streams running dry?
Yeah, from the number of wells. Mm. The streams will run dry. The wells will run dry toward the end of the year. And of course, people in Occidental should know this very well because part of the year, toward the end of the summer, Occidental has had to import water and actually, I guess, now has a pipeline that comes from the Russian River, which is supplied by a kind of a fringe agreement with the water agency, the county water agency, which would cut Occidental off in really low water years. Mm. That's why I say it's sort of fringe. It's not a main contract. Mm. But there is a pipeline that brings water up from the Russian River to Occidental.
Oh, wow. So it's a very imperfect system here. It really does. It's very fragile.
Fragile.
Yeah.
I think it's really fragile in all of California. Mm-hmm. You know, aquifers are being pumped very low, and in the Central Valley, the ground surface has collapsed significantly. You know, probably 50 feet since the 1920s. I know it was about 30 some feet by 1977, and it's even worse now.
So and you're all the physically the ground
physically lowered
is
yeah.
physically collapsing
because of withdrawal of water at deeper and deeper levels beneath the Central Valley.
Wow.
And then all the pipelines for distributing water all over the state are very vulnerable.
Mm.
You know, the more infrastructure we have, the more vulnerable we become. Right. The more we can live on our local supplies, the more robust our system is, ironically.
Right. Well, that's same with energy, isn't it?
It is.
You know, same thing. Big networks, lots can go wrong.
And water and energy are very closely interconnected because we have to use energy of some kind to get the water from one place, from, you know, its origin site, collection site, either underground or on the surface, and to where it's going to be used.
Right.
And
right.
So in California, the estimate is around 20% of all energy use is for water supply.
That's a huge amount.
It's a huge amount.
That really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, let's just take a break there. I'll just for a couple of minutes, and then we'll get back to Jane Nielsen and talk about some more water issues. I thought I'd play something else a bit irrelevant. Winona Carr and Till the Well Runs Dry.
You never miss your water till your well runs dry. I never missed your baby till you said goodbye. Tommy, one more time. The day I saw your baby and you looked so fine, all I could say was you used to be mine. I just sighed, cried, just about to lose my mind. Baby, you've been gone so long. Try me one more time.
Try me one more time.
Baby, try me one more time.
Try me one more time.
I'm alone, so alone. I'm just about to lose my mind. Till the well runs dry.
Till the well runs dry.
Till the well runs dry. saw you, baby, and you looked so fine. All I could say was you used to be mine. I just sighed, cried, just about to lose my mind.
All right. Till the water runs dry, Winona Carter. Till the well runs dry, excuse me. This Arnaldi, your host of Tommy's Holiday Camp, every Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. on Cows Radio 107.3 FM. It's 25 past 8. And we're speaking to Jane Nielsen about water issues in Sonoma County. And so stay tuned. At 9 o'clock, Miss Annie will be in for a soul and R&B show. If you've got any questions, give us a call, 874-1073 in the studio, and or give us an email and I'll get your message. And you can go to arnold101@earthlink.net and send us an email on the internet tubings into the studios here. All right, let's get back to Jane. And right, you want to talk about, now you're involved with the Sonoma County Water Coalition now. You're doing a lot of work with them.
Yes, my group, SWIG, Sebastopol Water Information Group, was a co-founder in about 2004 of the Sonoma County Water Coalition, which consists of about 33 groups. Mm. Not all of them directly involved with water. It includes the League of Women Voters, as well as the Sierra Club and several groups that are community benefit oriented, such groups as various watershed organizations, and we have a very good process, and we work on a lot of the issues regarding water, big ones and small ones, all mm-hmm. around the county. For example, we wrote a letter on the creek that was being misdirected and wetlands drained in Grayton a year or so ago, maybe 2 years ago now. Time goes fast in water. So I did want to mention this is becoming a group with a fair amount of clout in the county and has been looked at by other water groups in the state as having a very good process for keeping a coalition going, even though many of the groups have different positions on critical issues.
Oh, very interesting. Yeah, that's a great challenge to do that and keep it together.
Yeah, and we started out mostly concerned about having a groundwater management plan for the county. And now we've expanded to looking at streams because a lot of streams are beginning to run dry, and that's one of the reasons that salmon are so threatened in North Coast streams. And the coalition itself has joined a group called North Coast Stream Flow Coalition, which is aiming at trying to get North Coast California streams rewatered. So we're working on lots of different water issues now, and another major issue is the privatization of water, and it becomes quite a major effort to meet all of the challenges.
Well, that's it. It's not just can't just focus on one thing. There's so many different challenges from so many different areas coming
at it. Water is so fundamental.
Yeah, number one, really.
Number one.
There isn't anything more important when you think of it.
Right. So I did want to mention that the thing that I'm about to mostly focus on now is a process for looking at groundwater management planning for the Santa Rosa Plain. A groundwater management plan was done for Sonoma Valley a couple of years ago, and a very successful process, which started with involving all the stakeholders that could be found to bring to the table and talk about groundwater issues and bring everybody up to speed with what the real challenges are. It was a very successful effort, and I attended a lot of the meetings just to observe it. I was quite impressed. A similar effort is about to start for the Santa Rosa Plain, which is a much bigger challenge. So it's going to be interesting to see if the facilitators can bring the kind of focus to bear and get everybody focused on what the real issues are, the science, the mutual concerns, to get everybody understanding each other's concerns, where they're mutual and where they're disparate, how we can bring our process together to help everybody work out their own issues, which is really what did happen in the Sonoma Valley.
Because you have obviously got industrial uses, you've got vineyards, you've got dairy. Residential dairy. Mm-hmm. There's such, and they've all got different needs. That's quite a lot to mash together.
Individual well owners in areas where they've been worried about contamination, for example, the farming interests really don't feel that there should be any monitoring or observation of how much they use. A lot of the problem, of course, is that groundwater is under the ground and we can't see it, and people would like to think that it's unlimited.
Right. Well, that's it, isn't it? It's mm-hmm. out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah, and it's not just one group. I think a lot of people would like to feel that way.
How do you see it playing out then on the Santa Rosa Plain?
Well, I think it's going to be very challenging. If it play, all I can say is how I saw it play out in Sonoma Valley, where groups as disparate as the Sonoma Ecology Center and, the dairy farmers and the wine growers who came with different attitudes about the land and how it should be used, went through team building exercises. There were presentations about the science that the U.S. Geological Survey had done a major groundwater study in Sonoma Valley. They're just completing one for the Santa Rosa Plain. So that's the most up-to-date information. And when that comes out, the presentation of that information will be very important. A model of what the future is likely to look like under different scenarios was one of the things that struck fear and terror into everybody's hearts in Sonoma Valley and helped them achieve the understanding that everybody was in the same boat.
Right. That's it, isn't it? They literally are in the same boat.
Right. The same little water basin boat.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Once they get that in their heads, I suppose that helps a lot, I would say, on the focus.
Right. And many meetings with discussions just to understand the individual views and concerns and needs of each community was very important. Yeah. And the critical part is the Center for Collaborative Studies, which the County Water Agency has hired to do the facilitation of groups such as the Sonoma Valley Basin Advisory Panel, it's called, and will be doing the same for the Santa Rosa Plain. They are very skilled.
Oh, okay. And when do you think that will start happening? When are we going to start hearing about meetings and that whole process?
Well, the first stage is a stakeholder panel, it's called, to start talking about the various communities, to bring representatives of various communities together to talk about the communication problem, because there's a lot more disaffection among the different groups in the Santa Rosa Plain than even we saw in Sonoma Valley. And so that panel is going to start meeting on April 5th.
Oh, very soon. Okay.
And then once that process gets going, the center will come back to the Board of Supervisors with a progress report and tell them, what they think the formation of the main panel, which will be quite large, when that might be able to start. But they feel they have to reach out into the communities and find out what avenues of communication will work to lower some of the suspicion that this is some kind of a grab for water, when actually it's a process in which everybody has to voluntarily decide what they want to do about the situation based on the information that's available.
Exactly. Everyone's agreeing on what's been given, and then, they can move forward with something at least. Yeah.
Right. And this is actually a state-sponsored process. It's outlined in a law that was originally a bill called AB 3030 some years ago. I've forgotten now. I think it was something like 1989 or 1985 that this law was passed. And I saw the wisdom of it. It's an entirely a non-regulatory process. And I saw the wisdom of how they structured it from the beginning. But the rules around it are that a government agency has to sponsor it, and there have to be notifications of all the meetings. Mm-hmm. There has to be certain resolutions passed, and then if you do the process the way the state has laid out, and you know it comes together and it works, then you can apply for grants to help you with your management.
Okay.
And whatever you decide to do.
Oh, good. So they are linking
toward
it
management.
In.
Yeah.
Right. They're linking it through the whole process. Then there is mechanisms to reach an end.
That's right.
Excellent. Excellent.
Right. And it's a very well thought out. Model.
Oh, great. That's good to hear you saying that.
Yeah, I was quite impressed.
You're comfortable.
Yeah.
Oh, excellent. Well, let's just take another quick musical break, and then perhaps we can, topic be good to talk about is what is in our water? What are we getting out of our wells? What else apart from water is in there, and what are the problems? Should we chat about that? And so on that end, I'll play that Howling Wolf song. I asked for water. She brought me gasoline.
Oh, I asked her for water. Oh, she brought me gasoline.
Yeah, Howling Wolf. I asked for water, she gave me gasoline. So that's a lead up to the next question I have with Jane Nielsen, a water activist here in Sonoma County. And water. I mean, we're pumping it out of the ground, but what else is coming on out, and what's natural and what isn't?
Well, whatever comes out in water from the ground is something that's in the ground. And there's in the ground there can be quite a lot of impurities. And in Sonoma County, one of the best aquifers is in the hills around Sebastopol, and you can find this rock actually from the Russian River all the way down to Kotati and along the west side of the Santa Rosa Plain, along the Laguna, and then west to Bodega. It's kind of a butterfly shape, and it's called the Wilson Grove Formation. So the Sebastopol Hills and the heights, you know, like Burnside Road where I live, and a little farther to the west, is most people are getting their water out of this Wilson Grove Formation. It's a marine unit laid down in the ocean. It's got bromides in it and bromates, and it's got arsenic in it. So the arsenic in the water can be relatively high. Most people don't need to have filters for their home wells, but for municipal production, when the arsenic, when the rules, the EPA rules, lowered the arsenic levels for water, it became a problem for Sebastopol.
And when was that?
I think it's this year that everybody has to comply. There was kind of a 10-year period in which they could reach compliance. They passed that rule in something like 2000, 2001. They brought it down to 5 parts per billion from 50 parts per billion.
Oh, that's a huge drop, isn't it?
Yeah. But of course, a lot of people think it should be only 1 part per billion.
And what does arsenic do? Just in
arsenic
concentration?
It's not good for you. You know, it's a poison.
Right. Well known for that.
Builds up in organs. Doesn't get excreted by the body very easily. It's of course, you know, as with many poisons, you need a little bit of it for your bodily functions, but not too much. And you know, so. That's one thing that's in the water. And, of course, there's calcium, which doesn't do any better for your pipes than it does for your water pipes. In general, you know, you want to filter your water if it's coming out of the Franciscan. It's high iron. You know, we have an iron filter and also a filter for the salts that build up in the pipes, like calcium.
Yeah.
And manganese and so forth. And what we put in the ground also gets into our groundwater. And, of course, there are regulations in the county. I hope they're very well enforced that keep septic fields in different strata or different levels far from where wells are put down, well pipes. But there are some areas where there have been failing septic tanks, and there's a high level of nitrate that can get into the water in the wells. And that's very dangerous, especially for children and pregnant women. It can cause what's called blue baby syndrome in a fetus or in a young child. But it's also been linked with, I think it's non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, some kind of lymphoma. It's been tied to it. So that's one major problem. And then, of course, leaking gas tanks, buried gas tanks can leak. And there's quite a number of them. Actually, there's a website called GeoTracker, I believe. If you go to GeoTracker, you can actually find maps of where the leaking gas tanks are in your neighborhood.
Oh, lovely.
Yes. and then, of course, there's a major issue that's being raised all over about what happens in sewage treatment. The wastewater that comes out of sewage treatment plants, what do we do with that, and what is in it? And the standard now is called tertiary treatment with disinfection, which is much better than secondary treatment. But it's not drinkable water. And that's the water that's now being advertised as the answer to our water shortages because it can be used for irrigation, well, of lawns, if we really need lawns, which we'd like to spread the word that you don't really need a lawn.
Right.
But the real question is, should it be used for irrigating grapes?
Right,
should
food
it
crops,
be used, for any kind of, well, let's not call wine grapes food crop.
Okay.
But
commercial crop.
It's a commercial crop. What actually happens to it? It's been used quite a bit to irrigate grass, pasture land. Mm. There is some buildup of salt from it, especially because metals don't get removed that much, and some metals can be very dangerous if they build up in the soil in fodder that cows eat.
Right.
And any time you've got wastewater, you've got some low level of whatever is put into that water. And of course, we don't separate toilet water from, you know, wash
water.
So there are personal care products. There are antibiotics that people take and their bodies don't process them completely, and they go into the wastewater, and the wastewater treatment doesn't process them completely. Hormones.
Mm.
Hormones in water is probably one of the reasons that we're finding feminization of various kinds of amphibians and even alligators.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, in Florida. That's been well documented. And now it's very clear that amphibians, frogs and toads and so forth, have that problem, too. It's hard to separate, not so much here, but in the Middle West, where they use lots of the herbicide atrazine. That's been shown to feminize amphibians. But there's lots of estrogen because so many women take birth control pills.
Right.
So that's a little sketch.
Just some of the wonderful things that are invisible in our water.
Right. And then if we dump wastewater into soils and we keep on doing it at, you know, small amounts, and there's very tiny amounts of all of these items that I've just been listing in the water, but you dump millions and millions of gallons,
right,
billions of gallons per year on soils, and it goes into the soils and it clings to the soil particles, which is what happens.
Okay.
You know, that doesn't, you know, the soils are what clean it out. Eventually, the soils won't be able to take anymore, and it will go into the groundwater.
Well, it'll just pass right into it, you know.
And then the other side of it is the sludge, the solids that come out of the sewage treatment plants, and those are very hard to dispose of, and the current trend is to put those on agricultural lands, too.
Yeah, there's something in the paper in San Francisco. There's a big controversy right now because they've been selling their sludge as composting materials, and people are saying, hold on a second, we got some nasty things in there. Should we be doing this?
Right. Right. So. I think, you know, I really praise San Francisco's composting program. They are reducing the amount of material that have to be sent to the landfill. And that's really, I feel, the next big challenge for Sonoma County is to decide to use the landfill as a recycling center, as a resource redistribution center, and not to keep putting, you know, what we think of as waste into the ground, because that is another contamination source. And, of course, our landfill has contaminated the groundwater already at Mecum Road. But San Francisco does have to face the problem with the sewage sludge that it wants to reuse. Probably the most important thing to do would be to start emphasizing systems that separate the, you know, the home waste, the black water,
it's called,
from commercial and industrial waste, so that we don't have all those metals in it. But, you know, dealing with the personal care products and the and the antibiotics and the hormones is a major issue. It might be possible to do heat treatments, but that takes energy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because those compounds should be broken down by heat to a large extent.
Oh, okay. there's a way to get them out, but it all costs. Mm-hmm. Whew, is anybody sipping water out there?
Yeah, big heavy issues, and you know we're all involved.
Well, that's
one
it.
Of us.
How many wells are there in Sonoma County? Do you have any idea?
There is a number that that I have heard for the last 10 years, which is something like 40,000 wells. But I know that well permits do not have to be adjudicated at all. There's no decision there. If you put in a request for, you know, you pay your money down and fill in the form for a permit, you get your well. You might have to do certain tests in the areas of the county that are identified as water scarce, an old identification. So it really should be redone and brought up to
a current understanding,
and maybe defined a little better. But in any case, you get your well.
Right.
And so I know there have to be more than 40,000 wells. Mm. I've heard the number 75,000 people served by wells. It's one of the county, if not the largest number of wells for a county in California, then certainly one of them.
Very interesting. Wow.
Yeah. Lots of people in this county depend on individual groundwater wells.
A lot of remote areas still, not a lot of city water.
You know, community, nonprofit organizations. There are a lot of well, I'm searching for the word, but neighborhoods that have a community well that they support. And
that's like that one in
a lot of them around Sebastopol.
Right, it was just about that one in Sebastopol that John. Because that's a whole other
one.
Just near Fiesta Market.
Back of Fiesta Market.
So how does that work when there's a communal water system like that, a small one?
Well, it varies, I'm sure, but generally there's somebody who's a manager, either a volunteer manager or somebody who's hired as a professional, and the Belmont Terrace, that's what we're thinking of. The Belmont Terrace organization has a board of members, you know, people who live in that community, and they have to meet state standards of purity testing. They have to do tests all the time, and follow all the rules and regulations that a municipal system does, just about.
That must be quite expensive for a small group to maintain that.
Yes, but connecting to the city could be even more expensive.
Oh, okay.
On a one-term basis, and you know, so you don't get to amortize that over time too much. You have to come up with maybe $40,000 a person, you know, per home, if they were to connect to the city.
Wow, that's a lot of dough,
Yeah, all at once, And you know, it might be something similar over 25 years of living there, but to have to do it all at once is big.
Yeah, in these economic times, that's not what people want to spend their money on.
It wasn't neat. It wasn't a neat idea 6 years ago. It certainly isn't now.
Yeah. So what other, how are we doing? Oh, yeah, we should actually wrap up in about 5 minutes, I suppose. You wrote a book last year.
It was published in 2008.
Oh, my goodness.
Time has gone. Yes.
Oh, dear.
Yes.
So it was the year before last you may have interviewed then. So how has that been going, your book tour, and where have you been going, and what reaction have you been getting? And what is it called?
Yes, the name of the book is The American West at Risk, Science, Myths, and Politics of Land Abuse and Recovery, published by Oxford University Press, but written, we hope, so that anybody with a high school education can read it and use it. Because it's really aimed at helping people understand what the context is of pollution and erosion and the things that go wrong when we use the land too roughly.
Right.
That's where the abuse comes in. And we have been going all over California, and now, and actually we've been to Denver, and we're going to Northern Arizona in a couple of weeks to talk about the book. It's met with a great deal of praise. We have a website, which is www.theamericanwestatrisk.com, And you can see the reviews. We had one review on the progressive news service called Truthout, which if I had been asked to write it myself, I don't think I would have lathered on quite that much praise. It was really kind of stunning. And there's also an interview with all three of the authors. There's I'm a second author. My husband is the primary author. And then a colleague from Pomona College is the third author. And let's see, we went to Washington, D.C. We were invited to give a talk to the Department of Interior in February of 2009, which was a really, to the senior executives of the Department of Interior, not long after Obama took office. So we didn't have a really big full house, but we had a lot of people who were really interested and concerned. And and there we learned a lot of things about, you know, how much coal reserves there are left. One of the things we talk about is that we're running low on metal resources and energy resources, and not just the United States, but the world.
Right.
And we found out that the coal resources are even more limited than we thought. My husband, who was a USGS, U.S. Geological Survey scientist for many years and kind of a contrarian, was not too much loved by the Department of Interior. And we found out after the program was over that actually the organizer had been ordered to call it off.
Whoa.
But he refused. He was a very brave man, a former Marine and a very large man. And he went ahead. He said, I can't call it off. You know, they're flying over everybody. You know, it's all, everything's ordered. So he was ordered to give a disclaimer before we talked, but he sort of forgot that. And he was so taken by our presentation that he also invited us to give a talk to federal employees in Denver, Colorado, which we did this past October.
Wow.
So those are some of the things we've been doing. We're going to be talking at Humboldt State at the end of April. We're going to be talking in a desert symposium in the middle of April. And in a couple of weeks, we're driving to Flagstaff, Arizona, to talk to a number of classes and the community at Northern Arizona University.
Oh, beautiful. Are you getting good questions back from everyone? They're getting it, and
yeah, we get very good questions. And we have a blog. I'm not doing the blog too frequently, unfortunately, but I'll try to do better in the future. And we're going to be having our second printing in April. So we're very pleased about that.
Yeah, congratulations. That's quite something for, you know, a book that's not exactly
such a
novel.
Downer.
But again, it you know, it affects everybody here, and everyone's you know, should know about it. I mean, that's in this county, it's critical.
Yeah, we try to bring it home at the beginning of each chapter. Each chapter is about a different type of land use: farming, mining, road building, recreation. I guess few people actually think of recreation as a land use, but it really is, in a very wearing one, especially motorized recreation.
Oh, that's true.
So, and of course, we have a chapter on water use and energy use and garbage, and we try to bring it home at the beginning of each chapter so that people understand, you know, what it means for them individually.
Right, right.
And we try to supply solutions.
Yeah,
but as we say, you know, the main solution is one that's almost a fantasy.
But that's dreams, isn't it? You know, you have a dream, you have an idea, and you know, you may not get all the way, but at least you've moved towards it.
Yeah, well, you're never going to get there if you don't have the vision.
Exactly. That's the beautiful thing of it. So can you give out your email addresses and websites again? So
The website is The American West at Risk, all one word, theamericanwestatrisk.com. And on the blog, there are contacts.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good. And so let's see, we've got that. Oh, and when is the next meetings coming up of SWIG and of the Sonoma County Water Coalition?
The Sonoma County Water Coalition meets the second Tuesday of every month at the Environmental Center at 7 o'clock. And anybody can attend. SWIG is meeting every other month. Our next meeting will be in May, and we meet the fourth Thursday at Peace and Medicine's Education Center in Gravenstein Station in Sebastopol, right near Coffee Cats.
Right.
Again, 7 p.m.
Oh, excellent. So everyone go along. If you're interested in water, it is a great meeting to go to. I go occasionally, and it's fascinating. There's just so many issues out there you'd never think of. But thank goodness Jane and lots of other people are working on them and on our benefit. We don't know about it, but they are doing incredible work. I've been to government council meetings where, I mean, you cannot believe the abuse that some of the council members hurl at the public for trying to put the truth out there. It's just amazing sometimes, you know, what occurs in the process. And you're fantastic to be able to, you know, stick to it and follow the truth. You know,
well, we do our best.
Indeed. Well, thank you very much, Jane Nielsen, for coming in.
Thank you, Arnold.
And keep up the fantastic work. Thank you. And let's just go with a song. You don't miss the water till your well ones are dry.
In the beginning, baby, you really love me. That's what you said. And I was too blind, I was too blind to really see. But now you've left me, and how I'm crying, oh, I'm crying. Miss your water, baby. You don't miss your water till you're well. I said now till you're well, not dry. I kept you crying. Oh, you were so sad and blue. You know, I was a playboy, and I just would not be true. But when you left me, baby, must have been the way you said goodbye. 'Cause now I miss my water, baby. Now I sit and I wonder, woman, woman, how can this be? You know, I never thought, I never, never thought, babe, you would ever leave me. And now you've left me. You don't miss your water.
Yeah.